It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Suspected Russian airstrikes killed dozens of rebels opposed to President Bashar al-Assad. This happened Sunday in the rebel-held city of Idlib in northwestern Syria. University of Denver scholar Jonathan Edelman tells VOA he believes Russia deliberately attacked Idlib.
The Russians in general, as the American military pointed out recently, isn't as precise under any conditions. But in this particular case, it seems part of their broader strategy. And that strategy is that they want to eliminate anybody who is opposing Bashar Assad, except for ISIS, to make it very clear that then that's the only choice for the West. They're going to have to go with Bashar Assad.
Sunday's attack came as Human Rights Watch accused Russia and Syrian forces of cluster bombs and the Syrian war that now has lasted nearly 5 years and killed more than 200,000 people. The Lebanese militant group Hezbollah says an Israeli airstrike near Syria's capital has killed Samir Kantar, one of the leaders who was imprisoned 3 decades for killing 3 Israelis. Kantar was one of hundreds of Hezbollah members who have gone to Syria to fight alongside forces loyal to President Assad since the civil war began there in March of 2011. Israel welcomed Kantar's death but did not claim any responsibility for it. An Air France flight was forced to make an emergency landing in Kenya after a suspicious device was found in a laboratory. Air France officials said the device did not present any danger to passengers. The Boeing 777 was headed to Paris from Mauritius and made an emergency landing in Mombasa. All 459 passengers safely evacuated. This is VOA News. Iran is complaining that new U.S. travel restrictions on 4 countries, including Iran, violates the nuclear deal with 6 world powers. The restrictions are part of the new U.S. federal spending bill President Obama signed into law on Friday. Visitors from 38 countries whose citizens do not need visas to come to the United States will now have to get one if they are also dual citizens from Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Sudan, 4 nations the U.S. says are known to have sponsored terrorism. Under the deal restricting Iranian nuclear activity, the United States is not to interfere with any trade or economic activity that could lead to normalized relations with Iran. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said in a letter to Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif that the United States will fully adhere to its commitments under the nuclear deal. UN brokered peace talks on Yemen ended Sunday with a broad agreement that the war has to end, but no major breakthroughs there. UN envoy Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed said officials from Yemen's recognized government and the Houthi rebels reached a series of confidence-building measures at the meeting in Geneva.
The parties made serious progress through identifying a framework for negotiations toward a comprehensive settlement, in addition to defining a set of relevant confidence-building measures relating to prisoner release, improved social services, and improving the flow of humanitarian aid to Taz and to other Yemeni affected governorates.
2 sides are to meet again on January the 14th. More than 3 dozen survivors of an overturned ferry in central Indonesia have been pulled from rough seas. The vessel buffeted by waves, reported to be as high as 5 meters when it overturned and sank on Saturday. Ferry was headed from Kualakan Siwa, the towns on Sulawesi Island, when it encountered the bad weather. Thailand and Cambodia have agreed to boost economic and business ties. Happened during an official visit to Thailand by Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen. More now from Ron Corbin.
The visit by Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen was the first in 12 years. Speaking after the signing of several agreements to boost trade, business and security, Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha said both countries aim to strengthen bilateral relations. Prayut said the Thai-Cambodian relationship is currently at its best. Earlier, Hun Sen called for more Thai investment at a Thai and Cambodian business forum. The two countries pledged to triple bilateral trade and investment by 2020. Ron Corbin, Bangkok, Thailand.
And for more on this story and the rest of the hour's news, check out our website. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union awaits Burundi's formal response to deploy peacekeepers.
The African Union force, I mean, if you look at the mandate, it is a prevention and protection. And that is really the responsibility of any government, but which we see is not happening. So the rejection of such an offer is a very sad development indeed.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chairman of the African Union Commission. Human Rights Watch calls for action against kidnappings in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Nigeria's military commutes death sentences of soldiers who refuse to fight against Boko Haram. And the long-awaited South Sudan rebel advance team may finally arrive in Juba today, Monday.
The government of South Sudan is happy to receive them so that we start the actual implementation and operationalization of the agreement. It is worth mentioning that we are far behind schedule.
Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister, leprosy resurfaces in Malawi and will examine the impact of music pirating in Mali's capital, Bamako. Those stories plus Marco Omar's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of the African Union says the continental body and the rest of the international community will not sit by and watch the escalation of violence and human rights violations and abuses continue in Burundi. Erastus Muecha, deputy chairman of the African Union Commission, says the peacekeepers approved Saturday by the African Union Peace and Security Council are meant to prevent further violence and protect the citizens. He was reacting to news reports that a Burundian government official said Sunday that his country will not agree to the deployment of African Union peacekeepers. Deputy presidential spokesman Jean-Claude Carrera told the French news agency that the AU peacekeepers will be considered as an invasion and occupation force. Muecha says if news reports are true that Burundi has rejected an offer to deploy the peacekeepers, it will be a very sad development.
Well, that is a very sad development because when the decision was taken on Thursday, Burundi itself was given an opportunity to put across its case, and the decision was taken after due consideration of Burundi's point of view. But beyond that, it's obvious that everybody is aware that people are dying in Burundi. We have seen attacks that have happened in the barracks, people dying in the streets, bodies being collected in some of the environs of Bujumbura. And the African Union force, obviously, I mean, if you look at the mandate, it is a prevention and protection. And that is really the responsibility of any government, but which we see is not happening. So the rejection of such an offer is a very sad development indeed. But if the situation continues, the African Union and international community cannot sit by and watch genocide if it is going to develop into that genocide. But if Burundi is able to arrest the situation, that is a matter that is squared in their court.
According to the African Union Peace and Security Council, a four-day ultimatum is given. That is supposed to be coming probably today, Monday. As you said, the situation cannot be allowed to continue. What happens if the four-day ultimatum expires?
Once it expires, then the Peace and Security Council will look at various options that are available. And there is a very clear provision within the charter that the Peace and Security can resort to. But at this point in time, we hope, because I know that a formal request has just been sent to Burundi, and I think we have to wait to see a formal response. But we cannot go by what we've had in the media. We wait for a formal response, and then we'll cross the bridge at that point.
Burundi says the African Union Peace and Security Council resolution cannot be automatically applied and must first be endorsed by the UN Security Council. I just read a statement from the Security Council put out Sunday, which is basically endorsing what the African Union Peace and Security Council did.
Right. The African Union decision, of course, was also subject to the UN Security Council endorsing the position of the African Union, which, as you rightly mentioned, has now been done. And the next step, of course, is to talk to the authorities of Burundi to allow the mission to go. And the mandate is very clear that protection and prevention is to create an environment for Burundians to be able to come together and talk and find a peaceful way out of what is obviously a major crisis.
What is the African Union hearing now in terms of the dialogue? The African Union Peace and Security Council would like for the East African community under the leadership of President Yoweri Museveni to conduct this dialogue. Is there any movement?
Well, if there was movement, you would start to see the situation changing on the ground, and that is why the force is going there to create an environment for this dialogue to continue. And, of course, one of the things that you need to secure is both those parties to the table must talk to their followers to stop acting in a manner that jeopardizes peace. And that's why African Union, for instance, condemned the attack in the barracks, which obviously even the government of Burundi condemned. But we also know there are people who are dying, and therefore it means let's create an environment that these talks can also be able to succeed.
You're very kind. Thank you very much. It's always nice to talk to you. And let me say happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you. The same to you. I'm always happy to speak to you.
Erasmus Mwecha is the Deputy Chairman of the African Union Commission. He was speaking with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. South Sudan's government says it is ready to receive today, Monday, the first phase of the long-awaited advanced teams of rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. According to the rebels, the delegation, led by Chief Rebel Negotiator General Taban Deng Gai, is expected to leave Pagak in South Sudan via Gambela, Ethiopia, before arriving in Juba. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwish says the government has set up a high-level committee to receive the rebels. The arrival has been plagued by delays due in part to lack of logistics. The advanced team's task will be to work with their counterparts in the government for the joint implementation of the August peace agreement. Michael Makwish says the Juba government is happy to receive the rebel delegation because their arrival will mark the actual implementation of the peace agreement.
The SPLM-AIO delegation advance team, the first group will be arriving the 21st of December in Juba. The government has already set up a high-level committee headed by the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning. This is the body that will be receiving them. It is called the Coordination, Reception, Accommodation, and Catering Committee. This is the body that will receive them at the airport and take them to their respective places of accommodation and render them any other services that may be required. And the government of South Sudan is happy to receive them so that we start the actual implementation and operationalization of the agreement. It is worth mentioning that we are far behind schedule, and with their arrival now, this will actually mark the beginning of a real process for the implementation of the agreement.
Mr. Minister, the rebels have wanted to send at once a delegation of, say, 600 people. Do you know how many people are on this first advance team?
Well, phase one of the advance team is 150. The second phase of the advance team is 150. And the third phase of the advance team is 309. This is in addition to two of their coordinators who are already here. The total number of the advance team is 611.
You mentioned this is good for the implementation of the peace agreement. Of course, you know, that agreement has already fallen behind schedule.
Yes, I know that, and this is why I'm saying this will actually mark the beginning of the real operationalization of the agreement. We know that we are behind schedule, and there was no way for all the other parties to continue in the absence of the SPLM-AIO. And with their coming now, all the institutions established by the agreement will be operational, and including the permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangement and the NCA National Constitutional Amendment Committee and all the other institutions that are established by the agreement. They will begin to function, and this is why I say this marks the actual operationalization of the agreement.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you, and happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas to you if I don't speak to you again.
And happy Christmas to all the listeners of DOA. Thank you very much.
Michael Makwish, South Sudan's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today is Monday, December 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Human Rights Watch says at least 175 people and probably many more have been kidnapped in the Democratic Republic of Congo this year. The rights group has called for a special police unit to track down kidnappers and investigate allegations of complicity by state agents. Nick Long has more for VOA from Rutshuru territory in eastern DRC, where nearly all the kidnappings have taken place.
Human Rights Watch says armed groups or former members of armed groups appear to have been responsible in many cases. Victims were usually released after ransoms had been paid. The rights group says it was told by an official the leader of one kidnapping gang could have been working with people in the military. That gang leader was put on trial in April, but his allegations of soldiers' complicity do not seem to have led to any judicial inquiry, and no other kidnappers have been tried since. VOA spoke to a kidnap victim, aid worker Amboko Kitunguro, who was abducted last month along with 13 colleagues by about a dozen heavily armed men. It was an ordeal, he says. The kidnappers marched their victims through the forest from midday until 10:30 at night. He says the next day the kidnappers, who claimed to be from the Rwandan rebel FDLR group, took the exhausted aid workers who had had nothing to eat or drink back to a road and released them. A few minutes after we were released, says Kitungira, we met some government soldiers. They asked us, "Where have you come from?" he says. We told them we had been kidnapped, and they said, "Really? We were looking for you." The Congolese army reported its soldiers pursued these kidnappers and freed the hostages. But Kitungira said there was no pursuit and no shooting, even though the victims told the soldiers the kidnappers were just a few metres away. Asked if the soldiers' appearance at the moment of their release had been a coincidence, he said he could not comment. Local sources said a ransom was paid for the aid workers. UN mission spokesman Felix Bass told VOA the number of kidnappings has gone down since the United Nations and the Congolese army agreed on an anti-kidnapping strategy.
Le problème de ces enlèvements réside aussi dans le fait que face à la pression de ces bandits.
One of the problems, he added, is that people are often tempted to pay ransoms, which does not help to reduce kidnapping. According to Human Rights Watch, at least four of the kidnapped victims this year were killed and another has disappeared. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
The Nigerian military said over the weekend it commuted the death sentences of 66 soldiers who were found guilty last year for their refusal to fight against Boko Haram Islamists. The 66 had been condemned to die by a military tribunal in two batches in September and December 2014, with their death sentences confirmed by a military council in January and March this year. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma says the sentences were commuted following a review by the military authorities.
You recall about 71 soldiers were arraigned before a court martial and wanted for various offenses, which include mutiny, conspiracy, and other charges. And they were tried, and during the process of the trial, five of them were discharged and acquitted. One of them was found guilty on one count charge, and he was given imprisonment with hard labor for 28 days. 66 of them were sentenced to death by firing squad. But based on petitions, and the Chief of Army Staff directed for a review by the Directorate of Army Legal Services on the merits of the cases and recommended for reduction in the sentences.
These soldiers, according to what we understood, they refused to fight Boko Haram. Does that mean the military does not consider what they did as serious?
No. The hallmark of military profession is professionalism and discipline. So there is no offense that is taken lightly. You know, it is considered on its own merit and based on recommendation by the legal service. Instead of these people to be killed, they better serve 10 years jail term.
Those soldiers, I think what they said then was that they did not want to go and fight when they did not have the equipment. Does your military now, do you have the equipment now? Or were they right for saying that?
I want you to get these things clear. It is not because they refused to fight. There were quite a range of offenses, and that is why you see conspiracy and attempted murder. Among them, there were those who fired at their general officer commanding. So it's a variety of offenses. And coming back to your question, I can tell you that you cannot get 100% of what you are looking for. But I can tell you we have gotten the much we needed to rout out the Boko Haram terrorists, and we are doing our very best, and we'll continue to do our very best.
2015 is coming to an end. Your president had given you the military to do your job and give Boko Haram, either get rid of Boko Haram. Do you think the military can meet that deadline?
Yeah, we are working with that timeline, and we intend to ensure that we succeed. We are working so hard in the sense that you can judge by the number of successes we have recorded, especially in the recent times. Boko Haram has been degraded. They will no longer have the capacity or the capability to carry out large jobs.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Southern Malawi has seen a resurgence of leprosy, which was believed to have been stamped out in the country in 1970. The disease has been reported in five districts since 2011, including the capital, and the caseload continued to grow. Lamek Masina has more for VOA from Blantyre.
Malawi's leprosy-free status does not mean the disease was ever totally eliminated. In 1994, the World Health Organization defined leprosy-free status as having less than one case per 10,000 people. So far this year, the government has registered new 629 cases, up from 554 cases in 2014. Leonard Mawaya, program manager for the Department of Leprosy and Skin Diseases at the Ministry of Health, attributes the resurgence to complacency. He says people thought the disease was gone and funding was cut.
Even the program office itself has only one vehicle catering for the whole country. For us to do supervision from the north down to south becomes very difficult. And then the rest of our officers, maybe one or two, have got a motorbike or two and so on. But the rest don't have. They have to borrow.
Leprosy is far from the biblical plague it once was. The skin disease is caused by bacteria. It is infectious, transmitted via sneezing and coughing, but it is now treatable. The WHO recommends multi-drug regimen that makes patients unable to transmit the infection after just one dose. People in Malawi with the disease can receive outpatient care in all five affected districts.
In August 2015,
this man, who asked VOA not to reveal his name for fear of being stigmatized, says he was diagnosed last August. He went to the hospital because he had a light patch on his skin that felt numb. He says the doctor has put him on treatment right away and he has seen a great improvement. But the diagnosis can still mean discrimination. Patient Agnes Mbewe says people who know about her leprosy diagnosis are avoiding her because they say it is contagious and she may spread the disease. I feel sorry for myself, she says. Without treatment, leprosy can be disfiguring and lead to complications like loss of feeling, permanent nerve damage, and muscle weakness. A Catholic parish in the southern district of Balaka is providing food and shelter to 23 people severely disabled by leprosy. Skin disease specialists met recently in Malawi. They said the leprosy escalation can be contained within 2 years, but to do so, an additional $16,000 in funding per month is needed. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
For practically no cost, young men on the streets of the Malian capital, Bamako, will put the latest hit songs onto your cell phone or memory stick. They are called telechargers or downloaders. With limited means to stop the pirating of their songs, musicians are now using the downloaders to promote their work. Katerina Hoyer has more for VOA from Bamako.
When Siddiqui Diabaté, the son of Mali's choir master, Toumani Diabaté, wanted to promote his latest release, he did not bother with radio TV spots. Instead, he sent his manager to Fankele Diara Street to see the telechargeurs. The young men crouch over the laptops. They transfer tunes to mobile phones and USB sticks for as little as 4 cents a song. Siddiqui is the most asked for artist. Playing his music on slow days can draw dozens of customers. Downloader Al-Fusaini Balu says the street is like a market. If you want to reach people, this is where you go, he says. You can't sell cassettes and CDs anymore. Everyone uses memory cards. Frequent power cuts and a spotty internet that is still too expensive for many Malians have created a niche for the city's tech-savvy youth.
Bon, c'est-à-dire les chansons qui sont à mode, on sait. On connaît les chansons qui fait bouger la...
Downloader Aboubakar Koulibaly says, we know the popular songs, the tunes that make people dance. He says, people always looking for the latest songs. If I like a particular song, I'll recommend it. The most popular request is Malian rap. These days, rappers are the only ones besides religious leaders who can sell out Bamako's big stadiums. And the internet is pushing the African music industry toward new business models, ones that are turning mobile phone companies into the new record labels. Malian rapper Mil Mo recently signed a lucrative sponsorship deal with the mobile provider Orange Mali. His new releases are only available from Orange, bought by way of Orange Mobile Money. Other artists have signed up with Malian mobile companies Malitel or Sutelma. But not all artists are happy to see their records ripped and shared on the street. The street downloaders do not share their profits. The Malian Federation of Musicians has struggled to fight pirating. In 2014, the government granted the association a $1 cut from every SIM card sold by mobile phone companies. But that tax was later overturned in court. Meanwhile, long-standing record labels like Mali Cassette are struggling to compete with the new technology and distribution methods. And musicians rely on weddings, the rare paid gig, and for lucky few, international tours to earn a living. Katerina Höje for VOA News, Bamako.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. I suppose here is Margo Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with hockey. In an all-Egyptian final, Eastern Company pipped defending champion Shakia 2-1 in the final of the men's contest at the Africa Hockey Club Championships in Lusaka, Zambia, on Sunday. Nigeria's Niger Flickers edged Ghana's Trustees 3-2 to claim the bronze medal. Meanwhile, Kenyan defending champions Telkom Orange edged Ghana's Police 3-2 in post-match penalty flicks to retain the women's title. The two sides were deadlocked at 1-1 at the conclusion of open play. Ghana Revenue Authority prevailed over Egypt's Shakia 2-0 to claim the bronze medal in the women's contest. Turning to basketball, in an all-Angolan final, Petro Atletico beat defending champions Recreativo de Libolo 89-75 to win the Africa Men's Club Basketball Championship in the Angolan capital Luanda on Saturday. Prior to the finals, Morocco's military side ASFAR upstaged Angola's Primero de Agosto 72-62 to clinch the bronze medal. Tunisia's Radez edged Egypt's Gezira 78-73 to place fifth, while Nigeria's Kano Pillars pipped Cape Verde Islands Bairo Adesba 77-75 to place 7th. In rugby news, Algeria beat visitors Tunisia 16-6 in a groundbreaking men's international 15-a-side encounter in Oran, some 420 kilometers west of the Algerian capital Algiers, on Friday. It is Algeria's first full international match played at home in more than a decade. Finally, in football, Somali fans watched their first live televised football match played in the capital Mogadishu on Friday. Somalia military side Horsed edged Somali police side and league champions Hegan 2-1 in the final of the General Daoud Cup in Mogadishu. Somalia Football Federation head Abid Kwani Said says this is the start of an initiative aimed at televising matches played in the country. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Butter in Washington saying have a lovely day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lino Modu discusses with medical experts the sexually transmitted diseases. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call in during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111.